we redesigned Entree Architect Academy, our private online membership program, to better meet your needs with more options and less cost. Build a better business. Be a better architect. To learn more, visit the homepage at entrearchitect.com. You're listening to Entree Architect Podcast, and this is episode 168. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. This week, another episode from our new podcast series called The Entrepreneur Architect, where I interview you, members of the Entree Architect community. I want to know your story. I want to give you an opportunity to share some of your knowledge. So each guest will share their story, their origin story, like we do on every episode. And then they're going to answer a series of questions that will help them provide value to you, to the listeners. And I find that it's going to be very, very interesting to hear many, many different architects answer the same series of questions. So let's get on with today's show. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, Chris Balow, Entrepreneur Architect. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, FreshBooks, NCARB, BQE Software, and RCAT. FreshBooks, get organized, save time invoicing, and get paid faster. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. And NCARB, helping architects reach their career goals. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/NCARB. And BQE Software, the makers of ArchiOffice, office and project management software designed specifically for architects. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/BQE. And RCAT, the leading online resource for free building product information. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/RCAT. Christopher Balow, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Chris is the principal architect at Balow Architects, which is a custom residential design firm practicing architecture up in New England, in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Maine. The firm's work consists of thoughtful and innovative design rooted in a New England vernacular tradition. And we talked a little bit before we went on the air here, and he has a very interesting story, the way he sort of works remotely out on the cloud, just like we do here at Five Cat Studio.
Yes.
And so I did share a little bit about you and your firm, Chris. I'd like you to take a few minutes to get into your entrepreneur architect origin story, share your journey from where you discovered architecture and sort of that story from that point to where you find yourself today.
Sure. Yeah. I was fortunate to grow up on an island in Casco Bay in Maine. And I was fortunate for two reasons. That island, it had a great culture and community out there. And also it was connected by a bridge to the mainland. So I had the opportunity to live on an island, but I also had a kind of a traditional 80s, 90s child upbringing where I could also go to the mall. But what I did when I was a kid, I spent a lot of time outdoors, and we would walk through the woods and with my friends or by myself, and we would find the summer cottages of people who weren't there, and they'd close them up, and I would, we would explore them. We'd go up on the porches, we'd go up and kind of look through the windows and peer around, and I would always kind of build a cognitive map of those cottages and bring it home with me and think about it and say, if the kitchen was here, where was the bathroom? So even at a young age, I was kind of exploring those spatial concepts, and I looking back at it now, that was definitely formative, and those cottage communities and the area around Maine that I was exposed to definitely is part of my design aesthetic to this day. I look back on some of the simplicity of that, and I try to bring that into the work that I do today. And as I got older, I always was interested in how things were put together and how buildings were constructed or anything was put together. And my dad wasn't particularly handy, so we didn't have a lot of tools or that kind of background. And I was the youngest child, so I was given the ability to kind of, it's like, oh, if you're interested in that, go explore it, go find it. And I did that. As I got older and started to work, I got a job as a boat builder. I found a boat building job.
Cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. And I loved boats. I grew up in the water. And those were the two things that I was interested in.
That's
so
my middle son, Henry's, that's his dream, is to be a boat builder.
Yeah, that was my dream as well. And I got to do it. So I learned, I learned so much. And I was building the same Whitehall yacht tender boat over and over again. And I did that for a summer before I went back to school. And after that, the next summer, when I was in high school, I kind of figured I wanted to be a architect, and the guidance counselor that I spoke to, they had that conversation and was like, yeah, well, it looks like, you're not that strong at math. So
yeah, that's the guidance counselor's go-to, math.
Yeah.
How are the math scores?
Yeah. So she was like, maybe, liberal arts school. So I went to a liberal arts school, St. Lawrence University, and I still wanted to be an architect. So I wanted to keep with the construction part of it. That was my interest in architecture, was, how does the house get built? I was very curious about that. So I got a job as a carpenter. I found a great contractor, and he hired me. I had no idea what I was doing other than the boat building stuff that I had been doing. And it was awesome. I loved it. It was a really interesting job, and being shown how to build a house was really important, I think. And I take that knowledge today from that job that I had when I was 20 years old. But we had a conversation one day, and he was like, oh, do you want to be hauling shingles up a ladder when you're 40 years old? And I was like, I don't think so. And that kind of helped me say, all right, I do want to be an architect. So I finished my job, my undergraduate degree at St. Lawrence, and got a internship at a place called the Yes Tomorrow Design Build School, which is in Warren, Vermont.
Sure, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, and it's probably the first place I met an architect that I knew they were an architect my entire life. I wanted to be an architect. It's kind of funny. It's like I wanted to be an architect, but I never met one. I didn't really know what they did. And I did an internship there while I applied to graduate school. And I found a school in Boston, which was close to my family. And it was really the perfect school for me, because the Boston Architectural College, where I went, you worked in an architectural firm during the day, and in the evening you went to school, which was great for me because I'd had my college experience. I just wanted to get the degree and learn how to do it. I wasn't looking for a true, quote unquote, college experience. And a lot of my friends were there. So I went there, I got a job. And I was just the first job I had in architecture. I was just I was the mail boy, basically. So I worked in a 100-person firm, and it was interesting because I was, at that point, I was pretty well educated, and I was just delivering mail to 100-plus people firm. And I got to be exposed to so many different architects, and it's like, all right, so this one is this designer, this is the technical guy, they're doing huge projects, and it was nothing that I was interested in. I wanted to do houses and barns, but I found it very fascinating just to be able to be exposed to that many people who do architecture as a career. And it was also interesting because I saw, I remember seeing the party where people got promoted to partner. And then, 2 weeks later, I remember seeing people get, 50 people get laid off because the job ended.
Right,
so
right.
I was like, yeah. it was a reality check. I was like, okay, so this is how this kind of works. And shortly after that, I got a call from someone who I had given my resume to. And they were a sole proprietor architect doing residential architecture in Ipswich, Massachusetts. And that was that was perfect. I went and interviewed, and it was a one-on-one. I wasn't doing any architecture at the other firm. I was just around it. And this was a one-on-one where I got to learn, and he was hand drafting as well. So I, you know, he taught me how to hand draft. I feel like I'm one of the, like the last tale of the people who actually learned how to do that. And, you know, I was just exposed to a small business, and it was middle class additions and renovations, and some big work, but also some, you know, little work in garages. And I really liked that. It fit well with where I was at. I was there for a number of years, and eventually it kind of hit that ceiling where I was, you know, I learned probably as much as I could have learned at that point. And just with the way the economy was and things, I left that job and went to, he actually let me go. It was the first time I'd ever been let go from anything. And it turned out to be a blessing in a way, because he helped me get a different job at a different firm, which was a high-end residential firm that one of his friends worked at. So I had a new job within days, so it didn't really affect me financially. And I was exposed now to 7-8 other architects that I got to learn from. And they were, you know, they were using using CAD software. And I was pretty confident that, because of my age, I'd always used a computer. I'm like, you just give me the software. I'll figure it out. That I haven't found a software yet that I can't just pick up. So I basically became, I worked there, and I was good at what I did. And I kind of moved around to each of these project managers working on different projects. I called it the fireman, right? It's like, all right, we need to put this fire out over here. So I'd hop around between the different project managers, and that, that was a good experience for me. And in hindsight, it created some bad habits, because it wasn't consistent. You know, they all kind of did it in their own different way. And I took some of those bad habits, but I was able to work my way up through that firm until I was, I was an associate there and a project manager. But I was also, I kind of tapped out there as well after 8 years, where it was kind of easy for me, if that makes any sense. Like, yeah. I was doing the same thing day to day, and I needed a new challenge. So, and my wife, I think, saw that before I saw it, which is sometimes
it's funny how that works.
Yeah. I think they see you better than you see yourself. So, you know, we had talked, she's in public school, so she had the good insurance, and we had our first child, and I was not home as much as either one of us wanted or pictured. So we came up with a plan. I had 3 months worth of work, and I had some other experiences that told me that, you know what, I can get another job. I can do, if this doesn't work jumping out, then I can find a new employment. Because after 8 years, I'd kind of felt like, I don't know if anybody would hire me. You know, I'm doing this one thing with this one firm, and I use this specific software. I don't use AutoCAD, which is like the industry standard. Like, can I find a job if I need to? Like, how hard would that be? And I went through a couple of experiences where I realized that, yeah, I actually could get another job if I needed to. That's not what I want to do. I want to try this on my own. So she had the good insurance. I had some work lined up, and we decided to jump.
So what year was that?
It was 2014, I believe. 2013 or 2014. I have to look back on it.
Okay.
It was my son had just turned one. So we decided that's what we would, you know, I was basically, the deal was, I'll watch him and start my architectural firm. And that's, you know, we had a great nanny. She wasn't coming back for personal reasons. And so we had a childcare issue. We also had a job situation. I had the work set up, and I said, let's just give it a shot. And so we decided that we'd do it. And 3 years later, it's up and running, and it was definitely the right decision, but also probably the scariest decision that I've ever made.
Yeah. Yeah. How did it work out with the idea of child raising and building a business?
Because
that's tough. I've done that.
Well, I don't know any other way, but I assume it's very, you know, raising a child is an experience that it's amazing, and it teaches you a lot about yourself. And I think that that's the same. It actually kind of dovetails with building a business, but you have to be, you know, you have to have clear separation of this is the workspace and this is, you know, the home life. And you learn a lot through that process, right? There's times when I've felt very confident and I've been watching, you know, my son and picked up the phone and that turned out to be a mistake because, you know, because he jumped off the couch and hit his head or something like that. And I was like, you know, when two days before I had done the same thing and it had worked out great. So you learn, you know, you learn and you're constantly adjusting and saying, all right, I have to, you know, set boundaries and make sure that somebody doesn't walk through the door behind me while I'm on the, you know, BBC television, those kind of things. Yeah,
exactly. Right. So you begin to live this integrated life where your business and your life sort of merge into one, but at the same time you start creating these limits so you can do both at the same time.
Yeah. And it for my business, it's been great because it makes me relatable to people who have families. You know, a lot of my clients have children my own age and are looking for, you know, to build an addition or to do something that's going to change their life because they have two children and, you know, they bought a house. And especially in this area, you find there's definitely a market where that next set of, you know, that next group of housing is just outside of their, you know, out of where they can purchase a house. Yeah. So you go from $40,000 to $50,000 to $80,000 to $90,000. And there's definitely a niche where you can do it, you know, renovations and additions and get people to stay in their home, which they want to do, and not be moving to a house that's outside of their budget or, you know, what they even really want.
Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, RCAT, FreshBooks, NCARB, and BQE Software. You already know all about RCAT and their free BIM objects and their CAD details and their specifications and product information, all free, ready for you to use. Well, today I want to share something new from RCAT. It's called Charette. Charette is a tool for sharing and collaborating with your colleagues and clients online in real time. You can upload photos and files, share specs and product information directly from the RCAT database, as well as from other sources on the internet. I've been playing with Charette in beta for a while now, and it's really cool. And now it's available to you. I encourage you to go check it out. Visit RCAT online and click the Charette icon right there on the homepage. And like everything offered at RCAT, Charette is a free tool for us small firm architects too. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/RCAT. 192 hours. You wish you had that much free time? That works out to about 2 business days every month. And when you're a small firm architect using FreshBooks cloud accounting software, that's the amount of administration time that you could save in 2017. That's time that you can spend doing the things you love, like being an architect. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. Sign up for a free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid faster. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks to access FreshBooks for free. And be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Do you know someone in your firm who's always dreamed of getting licensed, but was unable to complete the experience requirements? Well, maybe that person's you. Now you can get back on track with NCARB's new AXP portfolio. With this option, seasoned professionals can complete the Architectural Experience Program, the AXP, formerly known as the IDP, by submitting an online portfolio. Along with meeting your state's education and examination requirements, the portfolio will help you and your employees get one step closer to becoming a licensed architect. Learn more about NCARB's AXP portfolio at entrearchitect.com/NCARB. One of the most often requested resources here at Entree Architect is project management software. How do we keep our projects and our people organized while we grow as entrepreneur architects? BQE Software, an AIA Advantage partner, and the makers of ArchiOffice will show us how. ArchiOffice is the only office and project management software designed specifically for architects. It will help us manage people and projects and allow us to focus on designing great architecture. Whether you're working remotely or on site, ArchiOffice allows you to monitor the status of your projects and tasks and send out invoices in an accurate and timely manner. Entree Architect podcast listeners can get a fully functional 15-day trial of ArchiOffice today at entrearchitect.com/BQE. RCAT, FreshBooks, NCARB, and BQE software, please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community.
Let's get into some of our questions here. Other than becoming an architect, what's one big goal that you've achieved? And talk about the process of achieving that goal.
I mean, I thought about this one, and family is definitely the best answer, but I think everybody has that. When I originally got my job as a hand drafting architect, it was long hours, and I just remember not having a tan and not doing any vacations, and I was kind of out of shape, and I'd always been athletic, and so I decided I wanted to run a triathlon. So I set myself up the same way I've set up most of the goals that I've accomplished. I picked the time and the date and just started working on that. It was great. It was definitely, it's a singular kind of narcissistic thing to run a triathlon, because you have to separate yourself, kind of like a marathon, right? You have to separate yourself and put in time and, work towards that goal, but it gave me back some of what I, some of my youth and what I'd enjoyed, and it made me a healthier, more focused person because of it.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't just focused on, working at that architectural firm.
Yeah. And so that was before you started your firm?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've done it since. Here and there. I like riding mountain bikes, not road bikes. So it's harder to find that kind of event. And it's also hard to find it in your region. So they don't always come around, but when they do, I've found a couple that I've focused on and said, this is important to me and I want to do. And it's always been a good, healthy thing for me to do.
Yeah. I think it's important to set personal goals that are non-business related. Especially when we're practicing like we are, in a cloud-based environment where we're in our own studios by ourselves, it becomes isolating, and you become sort of at times overwhelmed by the work. And so having
Absolutely.
This other goal, this other piece, in addition to your family, to focus on you, it keeps you sane.
It does, absolutely. And it was necessary to get to where I am. I had to make some choices, right? Like, I love to ski. I'm a big skier, and for graduate school, for 7 years, I didn't ski. And so it was a big, when I got to go back and ski, I was so excited about it, because it just makes me happy, and it was fun. But I'm happy that I made those decisions and I could focus and set goals and achieve them. But you do need to stop every once in a while and just reset your course and say, okay, so that, you've done that, and here we're at, here is where we are. And, what's next? What's that next thing that you want to do?
Yeah. What about a struggle that you experienced and how you overcame that?
Well, I'm not naturally organized. So that is something I have to work at all the time. And I find it humorous that on job sites and talking with clients that, they think that I am naturally organized, or that I'm an anal person, because I that's what I have to do to make it work. I'm lucky that my wife is, so that helps me out a lot, but I have to constantly work on, being organized, keeping things together, not letting it get spread out. And, because of that, I also think I sometimes have imposter syndrome, where it's even funny for me to tell people that I'm an architect. Like, I don't want that, it sounds funny. It's like, you're an architect, so what do you, what do you do? So I constantly, you got to keep myself, in the, you know, continuing to work on that skill set that I don't have. And it also, I have to tell myself that I, you know, you are an architect and you have done this, and this is what you're doing. So that's my answer.
Yeah. Do you have an aha moment that you've experienced in your career? And
yes.
How did you take that and turn that into something big?
Well, I always look for opportunities to try things, even if I don't necessarily want to do them. So I would, you know, in my previous firms, I would send out my resume and sometimes go on interviews if the situation was good. So I found this very interesting architectural firm, did modern prefab architecture, and I interviewed for it and sent my resume and had a phone call interview, and you know, they were actually interested in talking to me. And I think part of that was that I didn't really need or want the job. I was just doing it. I was doing it naturally, which was sold the best me, I guess. So they called me up and were like, "Hey, I know we'd like to fly you to Manhattan tomorrow and interview you at the Dwell magazine's studio or their offices." And I was like, "Awesome." I'll do that. So it was just, I didn't really want the job, but I'm like, this is an experience you got to go do. And it's practice, right? Like, I'll go interview for something that I want to look at. So I went there, I interviewed for it. I went to Manhattan. I'd never been there before. And I went to the New York Public Library and just things that were, you know, I knew from Ghostbusters in my youth, but never been there. Went, interviewed, it went well and flew home that same day, and they were totally looking at an architectural firm in a different way. They were cloud-based. They did not have a centralized studio. They were utilizing talent from across the country. They had no central office space. They were just leveraging the magazine that they had a relationship with to use their conference space. And I'm like, these guys are super smart, right? None of them were registered architects either. And they were just looking at an architectural firm in a totally different way. So I got home, I thought about it. It wasn't what I wanted to do at the time, but I took, you know, some information that I got from them. So that was an aha moment.
Yeah.
The architectural firm that I worked in, where I did $5 million houses, nobody ever came there except for our spouses. And, you know, they'd walk in and be like, "It's so quiet in here. Like, what are you doing?" So I realized that you could do this and not have this crazy overhead that the firm that I worked for was. I was like, you can, you know, there's a niche that you can market to and get work from, and you don't have to have an office. You need an office, like, there's places that you can go. You can go to the library, you can rent that space. There's great, you know, there's great conference rooms if you need that. But most of the time I've ever been to someone's house for a meeting, it's their house, right? Or it's the job site. So why have this big, beautiful office space? I there's some good merits to it, but I think it outweighs it in some ways. And you can work from home, and, you know, it's like, if I need my big client to come and meet me, I can, you know, I can use any of the office share spaces around the city or wherever I need to be. So that was a huge aha moment. I took that and I was like, that's they're doing something smart.
Yeah, and that's what you're doing now. So what's one thing that makes you and your firm unique? What makes you different?
Well, I use so one thing that makes me unique is, we just talked about being cloud-based. That's unique in itself. But you know, I think we're scalable in that I try to put together a team specific to a project that it fits the needs of that project. And by that I mean, you know, I might be doing a small light commercial project where I want my code consultant to be involved with this, because that's, you know, that's what they're going to require. So I try to build a team and put the people who will best fit that team together. So it allows me to take on that project, and it allows me, and I can also take on a larger residential project by, you know, utilizing some of the people who work for me as contractors. So I've been able to get contractors to work for me who are talented and, you know, can do the work and produce at a level that is what I want them to produce at, that executes a project that I wouldn't have been able to do just by myself. But I can also just, you know, locally, I can just take on a small addition, which will help somebody who's just needs a, you know, they need a new bedroom because they had twins or something like that. You know, I can do that myself and still get that name recognition in the community and execute that project without having, you know, four or five people that it would have taken, that, you know, maybe a larger architectural firm couldn't do that. So it allows me to be more dynamic and be able to pivot and take on opportunities that some of the more established larger residential architectural firms wouldn't be able to do.
What are some of the things you learned when you went cloud-based and you made that decision? What are some of the things that you learned along the way when you did that to have to make that succeed? I think there's a lot of architects out there who are trying that model, mm-hmm. Or considering that model, and it's hard. You and I do. My firm works the same way, and there are lots of things that happen that you don't expect are going to happen. And so were there any sort of bumps in the road when you went virtual that you need to address?
I mean, there's still bumps in the road, right? I'm in my house. I don't have a sign out front when I bring clients here, and they're, you know, they are not a surprise, but it's my home, right? There are my family might be here. There's things that happen in just general house life, so that there are bumps in the road, but you need to be, like anything, I don't know that it's any different, but you need to be introspective and say, okay, this is working or this is not working, and now I'll make an adjustment. So it's reiterative, right? You have to say this worked, this didn't. And the toughest part about it is, you know, family life is cyclical as well. So there's, you know, there's school and there's summer break and there's April vacation, which is happening right now. And so you have to adjust to that. But it's, you know, it's setting clear understanding of I'm working or I'm not working. Here's the boundary. It's like this is my work time. This is not my work time.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think that's important for all parties. I think it's important for your client. I think it's very important for your family to understand those boundaries.
Yeah.
And for yourself to understand when you're working and when you're dad, because when those things become the same thing, that's where things get really complicated. That you do want to have this integrated life, but you have to know what your role is at that one moment.
Yes, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's that I always tell myself I want to be confident, but overconfidence can get you into trouble sometimes. So I do need to say, like, I naturally want to be like, I got this. I can be dad and I can pick up this phone and handle this and do the two things at one time. And, you know, I might be able to do it, but eventually it's going to run into a situation where that, you know, that was not the correct decision. So if I can tell myself, like, just separate the two, don't pick up the phone now, wait and call them back, or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes discipline. I think ultimately that's the word, is that it really takes discipline to be able to do that, to keep, you know, work and life separate when it needs to be, and to be able to integrate them in a systematic way so it works.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So let's get into some quick questions here. This is the lightning round here.
Sounds good.
What age did you become an architect?
Age that I wanted to become an architect, I would say I was 19 years old when that was.
What age did you actually become with license?
Oh, good question. It was 2000. I don't know the answer to that. I don't remember at this point. It was 2011. So I'm 39. It's 2017. So 6 years.
Okay.
So take that. 33.
Okay.
We'll put that as the answer.
I'm not sure I'd be able to answer that question. That either. What's your target market? We talked about that a little bit.
Custom single family residential. You know, I look at everything because sometimes the small projects lead into big projects. You never know who you're talking to. But single family residential is what I'm interested in. I've never been a person who wanted to design like the world's tallest skyscraper.
Yeah. Stipulated sum, hourly or percentage based fee. What's your fee structure?
my preference is percentage based, but I'll do hourly. And typically it's hourly if I can't figure out what the construction cost is. If it's just totally outside of a, you know, this doesn't, it's not easy to assume what the cost will be, then I'll just do it hourly. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy with both because I know how long things take me. So I just take the time to kind of figure that out and go back and look at past projects.
Other than architecture, what makes you happy?
My family. I love the ocean. I grew up, you know, I don't live near the ocean now. I grew up near the ocean, so I miss the ocean. And, you know, the funny, I enjoy the band Fish, which mm-hmm. is my wife's pet peeve, but something I've done since I was, I've gone to Fish concerts since I was, you know, high schooler. So I still do that with my friends and it's an outlet. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Best advice you've ever received?
It came from my father, and there was a municipal sand pile for the winter time. And I remember being in our station wagon and him wanting me to go get a bucket full of sand to bring home. And I didn't want to do it because it felt like I wasn't supposed to take that. And he told me, and this is the way I remember it, you know, basically you can do a lot in life as long as you act like you know what you're doing. So he was basically telling me to, you know, just act like you're supposed to take that sand and go get it. So it's something that I definitely still think about, is that you know you need to be confident and act like this is something you're,
yeah, you know, act as if.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's good advice.
It's funny, I don't think he meant it that way.
Yeah. But one personal habit or daily routine that contributes to your success.
I drop off my daughter Marin at daycare every morning, and that working from my home, that habit is very helpful, and that it's a clear delineation of when I return, this is work time, and before that was not. So that helps me realize, like, okay, here's the grind, and before that was, you know, family time.
A recommended app or internet resource.
So two of them would be Building Science Corporation. Their website is a great technical website. If you find yourself detailing something that you might not have a ton of experience with, they have awesome resources, and you can find a lot of great information on there that they share for best practices. And Instagram is the other one that I have found. I've tried lots of different social social things, and I really enjoy Instagram because it's visual. It's a great place to put out your work that you're doing as it's being done. So you don't have to, you know, architecture kind of has this long tail in that you start a project and by the time you photograph it, it's been, you know, it can be years, but you can take photos of things in process and not put them on your permanent website, put them on Instagram and show the work that you're doing. And there's a pretty good community of people who are interested in that, that I've just recently found.
Yeah. I love Instagram. I love it is one way to use Instagram where you just sort of post pictures and it's just sort of a portfolio, or, you know, instantly just share some pictures. But I love using Instagram, as a storytelling tool, you know, on both the, you know, the native app as well as their new story.
Yeah.
You know, live storytelling. But if you sort of look at it in terms of the way you're talking about, as your projects progress, you can tell the story of how that project became a project through photos on your Instagram.
And that's a great tip for people who are thinking about starting out on their own. Because I, you know, one of the big boundaries for me is I had worked 8 years plus on other people's projects that it wasn't my intellectual property. I couldn't just day one say, look at this, you know, amazing work that I did, because it's I don't have the copyright for it. But you can show, you know, you can show your design work and your what you're doing day to day in your office. And it's very interesting. And a lot of people out there are interested in seeing it. And the contractors actually do it way better than we do as architects. There's a huge community of contractors out there who are showing their day to day work and using the stories. And it's easier for them, I think, because they have, you know, they're doing the woodworking or you're doing the day to days at the project. But I try to look at what the contractors are doing. They're doing a great job on Instagram because there's a lot to learn from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the key with social media to make it work for business, is to tell your story, is to use it to not just show your work, but to actually tell the story of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about a book? What's a recommended book and why?
I thought about this one, and the one that I want to recommend is Rob Fallon's wood frame construction book that he has. That was as a residential architect, I think the best thing you can do is really understand how a building gets put together. And one of my pet peeves is seeing drawings where that's not actually how it gets put together. So I think that just builds, if you know how that is done, it builds a lot of confidence for your interactions with the contractor, and it gives you respect from the contractor because you realize how it's being done. So that book was like a Bible to me. I got my first job in architecture because I had that in my bag. I was like, this is what I read on the train. You know, this is what interests me.
Yeah.
Because it's a great resource.
We'll have links to everything that Chris is recommending here on the show notes. This is episode 168. So entrearchitect.com/episode168. We'll have links to all of those things. Chris, what is one thing an entrepreneur architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I think one of the things that I realized when I started on my own was to recognize bad habits. So from some of the firms that I had worked at, I picked up bad habits that were okay when I was just an employee, but literally cost me money as I worked for myself. So I was one of the people I work with to this day was utilizing Vectorworks, which is the software I use, was utilizing that software in a much more efficient way than I was. And I could see it as we collaborated. So I realized I needed to fix that, and I hired a consultant, actually. His name's Jacob Dale. Tangibly is his company, and he's a consultant for Vectorworks. And, you know, he actually came to my office and sat down with me for a couple hours, and I could just say, all right, here are the problems I'm having, and he could show me how to make it more efficient. And those are aha moments, because you're like, those tiny little processes are just taking me time. And I think that recognizing if something is not working for you, there's probably a way to fix it, and there's somebody out there who can help you with it. That's been the happiest thing I've done for myself is to get somebody to help me with fix those things.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, when those things sort of pop up, you're like, all these years of doing it.
Yeah.
Why haven't I fixed this sooner?
Well, like even like this one's silly because it's not even architecture. I didn't realize you could use the tab on the keyboard to move to that next thing on any kind of web-based thing. You can do that. I'm like, oh, that's I didn't know that. So it's great to sit down with someone who really has a mastery of the software. Because I use the software because I have to.
Yeah,
that's what we do. But he understands it from the architectural standpoint to the landscape standpoint, and would answer my questions and resolve problems that I've had for a long time.
Yeah. Let's wrap things up. What's one parting piece of guidance for other entrepreneur architects? And then how best can we contact you?
Certainly. So one of my first architectural mentors, Matt Cummings, he told me, like, you don't stay the same. You either get better or you get worse. So I've always thought about that. It's not just a straight line. You need to, you know, it's a craft that you need to work on, and there's ebbs and flows to it. So, you know, you need to work on being an architect and being a business owner, and you can reach high points and low points, but it doesn't just maintain itself. So I take that. And then chris@bailow.com, which is B as in boy, AILOW. com, and at Instagram it's Bailow Architects, which is another way to get in touch with me.
Okay, and we'll post all those on the show notes. Chris, thanks for joining me here today and for sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It was fun.
If you liked what we shared here today, complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode168. And if you want to be a guest here at Entree Architect Podcast as a featured entrepreneur architect, connect with us anywhere on social media, or just send us an email request to podcast@entrearchitect.com. We want to help you share your story, share your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast, and send us an email at podcast@entrearchitect.com. We have a whole schedule of people lined up to do the Entrepreneur Architect series, and I want to know your story. I want to include your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast. So send us an email, podcast@entrearchitect.com. Hey, and don't forget to visit the website to learn more about Entree Architect Academy, our private online membership program. It's built for you, the small firm entrepreneur architect. You can build a better business. Visit the homepage today at entrearchitect.com for more information. My name is Mark Arlepage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, share what you know. See you next week. Thanks for listening.